Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are always online at npr.org. You know, I've listened to this show quite a bit, and I've noticed that there's a certain segment where the intro can often be somewhat convoluted, somewhat confusing. You don't know where you are exactly until this person, let's say, I don't know, Mike Pesca, says the name of the segment.
Right.
And oftentimes it goes on, and there's biology involved, and there's state facts.
Etymology.
Etymology, all sorts of obscure
phrenology,
stuff.
The study of bumps on the
In
head.
In fact, what I would say is if you took all the intros of all the NPR programs and set them side by side in terms of complexity, you would find that the most complex intro to a program is done by Mike Pesca.
How
for
complex?
For a segment.
Where would it wind up in the rankings?
For a segment that we like to call The Most.
Oh, well played, sir.
Really? Really? I just have to pick up my ego from the ground. All right, Ian.
I think most complex is a compliment.
Complexiest.
If you're an organism, you'd rather be more complex.
Yeah, you're higher up the intellectual food chain. Yeah.
Right, although if you're like a Philip Glass opera, not so much. Go ahead.
All right, I brought in a most popular from KMBC-TV in Kansas City. There's a car dealership there, Max Motors, which has an interesting promotion. You buy a new car, you can either get $250 worth of free gas or a handgun.
All right.
And
cut to the chase.
Most people are taking the gun.
There
There's one guy, Jerry.
You can get way more than $250 worth of gas with a good gun.
Exactly. It works out. You can have it all.
That's an unlimited gas car right there.
Teach a man to conduct holdups, and he'll have gas for a lifetime.
So KMBC interviewed some people on the lot. One guy, Jerry Herzog, was there buying a new truck. He had this to say.
We'll have guns. We all need to have guns.
Can't argue with that. I went to their website, and there's a big heading at the top that says, this is Max Motors website, we are aware of the gasoline and crime problem in America. We want to be part of the solution, not the problem. So you can choose
one or
which
the other
side of that you'd like to help out with.
Which of you heard earlier how police are cutting back on their travel because of gas prices, this actually makes a lot of sense. They are connected.
They could have contextualized it as a marksmanship deficiency, but they just went there. All right, I have a most from Business Week. And it was one of these stories that I was a little skeptical at first, but then it started to kick in. 10 reasons why Gen Xers are unhappy at work. I'm a Gen Xer.
I am.
When does that end? I might be Gen Y.
If you have to ask, you're not one of them.
I think I'm Gen X.
I'm a millennial.
I'm X.5.
I think you're Y. Gen Y or the millennial. Trish?
I decline to answer.
Okay, so here is...
She's Generation Xer. Awesome. That's what she is.
So, here are some of the reasons they're unhappy. Their corporate careers got off to a slow start. The economy was awful when we graduated college. Just your luck, the economy was slow. And then there are those pesky Gen Yers. Many Gen Xers are charged with managing Gen Yers, which is an impossible task. And then it hit on the best thing. The Gen Xers are surrounded by a love fest. The boomers and the Gen Ys love each other. The boomers get youth and vitality. The Gen Ys get mentorship. And there's the rest of us in the Reality Bites generation going, oh, you guys are so annoying.
One of the things I loved about this segment, this little article, was that it said, in terms of technology, Gen Y people, they're totally comfortable with technology. Boomers can be like, hey, I don't understand it. I'm too old.
Computer, what's that?
And in the middle are those of us who basically have to fake it every single day.
Yeah, you guys like didn't even have Pong growing up, right? I mean, you guys just missed.
Yeah, we had
real
Pong.
We totally
it was
had
played
Pong
on an actual table with a ball,
oh,
Dan.
I've heard of that.
That's weird. Dan, what do you have?
I've got a most emailed here from Yahoo
the
News.
Most what mailed at what who?
Fireworks mark Brooklyn Bridge's 125th birthday. Very exciting event, and I was actually there last night. I'm lucky enough to live right up the street from the Brooklyn Bridge.
And still, you read the article from it.
That's
to see if it was true, to see if what you saw really
he wanted
happened.
To see if he was in it.
Yeah, this has been confirmed.
Yes, this is one of those rare reverse mosts where you don't go looking for the most, you go looking for the article to find where it's the most because you know you want to talk about it.
Also called a T-song.
Okay.
Sorry.
Is that the most spelled backwards?
Yes.
Oh, I get it.
Wow.
Well, I
it's
the Brooklyn
also called
Bridge,
a dad joke.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It was just too complex, thus rebutting your earlier assertion. But go ahead.
Hey, let's hear Dan's story.
Yeah, Dan.
Anywho, the Brooklyn Bridge holds a special place in my heart. I actually my very first date with my now wife, we walked across the Brooklyn Bridge.
Aww.
I proposed to her on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Wow.
We got married in the shadow of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Wow. Is your grandfather buried as one of those workers who died on the Brooklyn Bridge?
No. They were very far away from the Brooklyn Bridge at the time of its construction. But you know, so they had a lot of fireworks and big festivities last night in honor of our anniversary, which is actually coming up in a couple days.
That's nice.
And the Brooklyn Bridges. But it was a lot of fun. I took a bunch of pictures of the festivities. They had a giant Brooklyn Bridge cake. You know, I don't want to get all political here, but Michael Bloomberg, that guy knows how to run a city. He brought enough cake for everyone. I got two pieces of cake.
Really?
So,
free
you
cake?
Know, my tax dollar to cake ratio got a lot better last night. All right. So it was a good time, and I'll post those pictures on the blog.
Ah, oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
So I checked the Google Trends this morning, and number three at the time was Wing Music. Had to click on that.
Oh, like Live and Let Die, Paul McCartney?
I never know. I try not to go into Google Trends with any preconceived notions.
Okay.
I just like to see what happens.
Yeah.
And so I saw
world
that
will shake.
Searches for Wing Music spiked at 10 p.m. last night, Eastern time, which usually means on a Friday morning that they showed South Park last night. So there you go. What was on South Park last night? It was an episode called Wing. And so I have to admit I'm late to the Wing Music love, because this episode, I think, debuted 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. She's awesome. She is a singer who lives in Auckland, New Zealand. She emigrated there from Hong Kong, started her career singing at nursing homes and hospitals, and has released 10 CDs of awesomeness. And I'm going to play one of the most awesome for you right now.
Crank it up.
Is this AC/DC Back in Black? Started off good.
Casio solo.
Back in black, I hit the sack. I've been too long, I'm glad to be back. Yes, I let loose from the noose that kept me hanging above. I keep looking at the sky, cause it's getting me high. Forget the hurts, cause I never die.
I did not know there was so much talent out there on the nursing home circuit.
I just want to tell you a little something about Wing. According to her website, she is steadily creating demand for her live performances. Having performed on radio and TV throughout New Zealand and in nursing homes, cafes, at private parties, and within the 2007 university orientation circuit, Wing is now eager for international performances.
There are a lot of circuits out there that we really need to plumb. Yeah,
we have New Zealand covered today.
We got to be like the most circuited. The rendering plant closings and university orientations. Matt, you're here.
Yeah,
that tells
me
something.
Yeah, I have one of the most viewed stories at NPR.org right now. It's by NPR producer Nihar Patel, called Worst Director in the World Goes Postal. Have you guys heard about this German film director, Uwe Boll?
Yes.
Well, he can't figure out why he's such an awful director and why people hate him so much.
He doesn't know. It flummoxes him.
Yeah, it flummoxes him. Well, he has a new movie out this weekend. It's called Postal. And you'll find out why people don't like him so much. Here's Nihar Patel.
Uwe Boll's formative years sound pretty similar to Steven Spielberg's. An imaginative young boy, inspired by the likes of Orson Welles and John Ford, makes Super 8mm home movies. He gets rejected from a prestigious film school, but with a little money and a lot of moxie, produces his first film. But somewhere along the way, Uwe Boll's life story got a rewrite.
If I would be the worst director ever, why this is the case?
Well, you be the judge. His new movie is Postal. It's out tomorrow in a few cities. An unemployed American tries to stop a New Age cult, Al-Qaeda terrorists, and Nazis from getting their hands on a supply of deadly avian flu. Now, if you laughed at that last sentence, this movie is for you. Listen to this scene as two famous adversaries turn out to be close friends.
Hello, this is George W. Bush.
It's Osama. I need some help, man.
Hi there, Osama. I'm here for you, buddy.
Oh, thanks, Georgie. I just wish I knew how to quit ya.
Postal is intended as satire, a high body count, un-PC, controversy-seeking one at that.
It's maybe too harsh for a lot of people. I felt like it's time for a wake-up call like this, to nail down that absurdity we're living in since September 11. It's kind of a dangerous world, and we don't know what's next.
Uwe adapted Postal from a video game. There are six such adaptations in Uwe's oeuvre. This is why he's the whipping boy for many online critics. Games make horrible movies. His films Alone in the Dark and House of the Dead are both on the Internet Movie Database's bottom 100 of all time, But with the built-in audience, video game adaptations do make money.
Internet geeks, no matter what I do, they're not even interested what it is. They trash me to the ground. And they think I have whatever, a money printing machine at home, you know, and this is stupid.
These, quote, geeks created websites like OoveableIsAntichrist.com or StopOoveable.org. There's also an online petition to get him to stop making movies with over 250,000 signatures. A couple of years ago, Uwe was fed up, and he challenged all his critics to a boxing match in Vancouver. From the opening bell, it was clear.
Round one, here we go.
That this was no PR stunt.
Fans, if you can see this, you can see, if you can get in close enough, you can see the determined look on Uwe Boll's face. He is not joking around, ladies and gentlemen. Throwing some seriously big shots. He looks like a man that hits pretty good.
Hundreds of people showed up to watch Uwe Boll, an amateur boxer, land vicious jabs and knock out four critics.
Eight. Nine. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That fight is over.
Later, they turned it, of course, all against me and said, like, look, you promised us not to hit us, but was not true. I said it will be a fight. But I trained for this because I was like, I thought, like, if I have to box four people in a row, who knows? Maybe they are taller, heavier, better. I don't know. So I have to prepare myself.
After that, Uwe took the fight back to the internet. In response to snarky reviews, he left his own R-rated postings in broken English.
Well, I just read the responses he had to his critics, and they made me laugh.
That's Dave Foley, one of the members of the comedy group Kids in the Hall, who stars in Postal.
And I thought, this guy sounds kind of interesting, and, you know, to me, he sounded like kind of this crazy German intellectual.
Foley was surprised that Uwe in person was polite, charming, easy to work with, and he wore the title of worst director like a shiny gold welterweight belt. Uwe even challenged fellow Reviled director Michael Bay of Transformers and Armageddon fame to a boxing match. Bay dismissed Uwe as a troubled soul.
It shows he has no humor, you know, that he took it totally serious and was super pissed about what I said. I'm not a big Michael Bay fan.
A few of those critics Uwe boxed showed they could take a joke and made cameos in Postal, as does Uwe poking fun at himself as the owner of a Nazi-themed amusement park.
There are all that rumors out that my movies are financed with Nazi gold, and what should I say? It's true.
The art that he's creating isn't really about the movies anyway.
Dave Foley likens Uwe Boll's persona to comedian Andy Kaufman.
The art is really his life and his interaction with his critics. The movies are more or less incidental to that arc.
Like Andy Kaufman, Uwe Boll has loyal fans, but it's hard to tell if they like his movies or just like him. He doesn't seem to care either way. At a recent screening for Postal, a woman told him about an annual party she throws.
They show all my movies and then, of course, the new ones, what came out in that year. And I said, good.
She called it her Super Bowl party.
That was Nihar Patel, who's fast becoming NPR's Hollyweird expert. You can find the link to this and all the stories you heard on The Most at our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.
Really?